This is Jeb Blunt, author of Selling the Price Increase, the ultimate B2B field guide for raising prices without losing customers, and you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which has been named as one of the top marketing podcasts by Forbes and LinkedIn, amongst others. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since I get to read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message that you're a listener, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. This episode is sponsored by Marketing Architects, creators of the all-inclusive TV advertising concept that's so revolutionary, they wrote a book about it. I'll tell you more and how to get a free copy of the book in a few minutes. Now, let's get on with the show. Today, we welcome Jeb Blunt back to talk about his book, Selling the Price Increase, the ultimate B2B field guide for raising prices without losing customers, published by Wiley. Jeb Blunt is the author of 14 of the most definitive books ever written on sales and sales leadership, and is among the world's most respected thought leaders on sales, leadership, and customer experience. Through his global training organization, Sales Gravy, which is the best company name ever, Jeb and his team train and advise a who's who of the world's most prestigious organizations. His flagship website, salesgravy.com, is the most visited sales-specific website on the planet. And interesting fact, Jeb Blunt is now a member of a very exclusive club, the Marketing Book Podcast Six Timers Club. Jeb, congratulations on selling the price increase, and welcome back to the Marketing Book Podcast.
And I'm a member of the club. That's awesome. I get a t-shirt, right?
Oh, no, you're going to get much more than that. You're going to be getting, well, let's just say for the rest of your life, you're not going to be paying as much at Taco Bell.
There you go. I like it.
And I should let the listener know that Jeb Blunt is the hardest working man in sales. He is the James Brown of sales. And right now, he is on vacation at his lake house, but he wanted to talk to the listeners of the Marketing Book Podcast. So thank you, Jeb.
It's my pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me on. I love being on this podcast.
Thank you so much. Now, one thing I want to mention is one of my favorite conferences is yours, the Outbound Conference. And I've been to two of them. And they were in Atlanta, and your next one is in September, right?
That's correct. Atlanta, Georgia, the week of September the 18th.
And I heard that it's still not completely sold out. I think some in the past were, but even if it becomes sold out, there are still virtual passes. Is that right?
That's correct. The beautiful thing about the Outbound Conference this year is that we are live streaming the entire conference. So it's like over 50 hours of content, and our platform is amazing. So this is a high quality broadcast produced stream. That's like watching TV. So wherever you are in the world, you can tune in to Outbound, and all the sessions are recorded so that if you miss anything, you'll be able to go back and watch it. So it's very likely that we'll sell out the conference itself, but for all the folks who can't get in, you'll be able to watch it on any device that you have.
Oh, it's great. It's great. It's so great. Even this knuckleheaded podcaster went back. I think it would be better for more marketing people to go to that, but hey, what do I know? So now, in this book, Selling the Price Increase, I don't know if you intended it, Jeb, but you also included marriage advice. Like on page 109, where you write that you're dealing with an angry person, telling them to calm down is like throwing gasoline on an open flame. So, I mean, there's more value than I think you realize that's in the book.
Well, it's funny because this morning I was having a conversation with my wife about some reading glasses that she claims are hers. And
claims. Yep.
And so she started getting a little bit feisty. And I made the mistake of telling her that she was being feisty, and very quickly learned my lesson that is a wrong thing to do. Do not tell your wife that she's being a little bit ornery.
Okay. Yeah. Particularly if she is, but I mean, I'm sure Carrie's not that way. It's, you know.
And I, by the way, I'm not in possession of those glasses at the moment.
Okay. So that's how the story ended. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's all about staying cool and calm, which is hard for us to do, and we're going to talk about that. So one thing I want to mention, though, is this is a book on selling the price increase. You know, again, why is a book on sales on the Marketing Book Podcast? There may be a first-time listener on. I have a lot of books about sales on the Marketing Book Podcast because I feel so strongly that the best marketers, the most effective marketers, are the ones that have the deepest understanding of sales. They spend time with their sales team, and almost more importantly, they understand their buyers and what the objections are the buyers have. They are more effective. And another trivia, a bit of trivia about Jeb Blunt. I seem to recall once you told me that you get hired more by marketing people than by sales folks. Is that right?
That's correct. We are the number one role that hires us to come in as trainers or you know, to work with the sales teams or in an advisory role are CMOs.
I just think that's great, but I could understand it. You know, having been in the agency business where they would say, well, we're not making any sales. We're doing everything right, helping these clients. And it's like, yeah, but you're not following a sales process. You're not doing any prospecting. Yeah. You're not doing any of that stuff. I'm tired of getting yelled at. And I have a feeling that's what the case is with a lot of the marketers that hire you all.
That's exactly right. Well, they're generating a lot of leads, and that's what marketers' job is, but they're being held accountable for the conversion of those leads, but they're not in control of the conversion of those leads. The sales team is. So they need to make sure that the sales team is capable of doing those lead conversions so that the money that they're spending, they're able to prove out the ROI.
Yeah. So as I read this book, I saw all kinds of opportunities for marketing to play a role in selling a price increase. And I was wondering if you would agree with that, or should I get the needle out of my arm?
No, absolutely. And I think that, you know, of all the books that I've written, if there's one book that marketers should read, pick out of my library of the 14, it would be this book, because with price increases in particular, with existing customers, marketing plays a huge role in that. I mean, typically at the sales level, once a price increase has been decided on, at least a broad price increase, the salespeople, they're just getting the message, you got to go out and have a conversation with your customers, or you have to defend the price increase if it's we're just sending an email out and telling our customers they're all getting a price increase. And marketers are usually at the top end of that. They're working at the executive level. They're making the decisions about price optimization and especially messaging. So inside the book, we talk about these eight different narratives that you can be woven together mm-hmm. to deliver a message about a price increase. And marketers, you're the messenger. So you're going to be building a lot of that. You're going to be working with your sales team on how they deal with the objections or how they present the economic fairness narrative, for example, why we need the price increase, or how they're able to talk about future value if their customers are getting more for the price increase. So from a marketing standpoint, this book is important, but it's also important so that you understand and can step in the shoes of your sales team as they're having these conversations with the customers. Because if we look at pricing as a whole, there's lots of books out there specifically for marketers around price optimization, which mm-hmm. is very important for companies for creating free cash flow and profitability. There are no books other than this one that are written for the sales professional who is on the front line, face-to-face, you know, one-on-one with the customer. This is the only book, and it's the most comprehensive book that's ever been written on that. So when you start pairing good marketing practices around pricing and price optimization with good sales practices around having those conversations with the customers, two things are going to happen. You're going to get more of those price increases to stick, which means that you're going to drop through a lot more to the bottom line. And you're going to preserve those customer relationships so that you're not losing your customers or their orders along the way, which is pretty obvious but important, because the price increase doesn't matter if the customer left you in the process.
Right, right. And let me remind the listener, price is one of the four P's of marketing, which a lot of folks seem to forget. A lot of companies think it's only just about promotion, which is the fourth one. But also, it's a worst case, Jeb. I was thinking about how, let's say there's a marketer and they're in a meeting and they happen to hear that the company's going to be raising their prices, and that's the extent of the planning. I just thought, marketers, please go get this book, read it, and you're going to be invaluable for your company because you've got to do more than just announce a price increase. There's quite a bit more to it, and you will be your stature will raise, and you will it'll actually help with your the effectiveness of the price increase, because there's a lot of examples in the book about the wrong way to do it, and that really can hurt. So the foreword to the book is written by Victor Antonio, most recently the author of Mastering the Upsell, and he's going to be one of the speakers at Outbound, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And Mastering the Upsell is another book that I think marketers should probably read, because that book has got frameworks inside of it for, you know, back into the expansion selling realm. So in our world, our training program is called Account Expansion Selling. But if you think about the back end of sales after you've acquired the customer, upselling, price increases, all of those are opportunities to grow the customer base, and marketing should be intimately involved in those processes.
Absolutely. And with any luck, I'm going to be able to interview him not too long from now about that book. So as you may recall, I like to read an excerpt from the books that are featured on the show to give the listener a sense of what's ahead. And the foreword really was very well done. And it's relatively short. And Victor actually wrote a part where there's a dialogue that shows what the sales manager and the salesperson might actually be talking about. And I thought it set the stage. So I wanted to read that. But to celebrate your induction into the Marketing Book Podcast Six Timers Club, Jeb, I hired some actors to read it instead. So let's give it a listen.
For legions of sales professionals and account managers, the conversation that follows is an all-too-familiar and maddening reality.
Before I close out this morning's meeting, I need you to inform our clients that we're going to be increasing prices by 10%.
Okay, but what should we tell them?
I'll leave that up to you.
Yes, but what reason do we give them for raising our prices?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. Cost of material is up. Labor cost is up. Cost of doing business in general is up. Pick one.
How do you suggest we deliver this news?
I'm sure you'll figure it out. That's why we pay you the big bucks.
Will these increases be effective immediately, or will there be a grace period before they actually kick in?
It's immediate.
Well, they're not going to be happy about that. We're going to lose customers to our competitors.
Look, you have the relationships, so I'm sure you'll find a way to break the bad news to them gently, without upsetting them.
Well, okay, I'll do my best.
Great. Now, if there's nothing else, this meeting is adjourned. Let's get out there, close some deals, and let's stay positive.
This common scenario is why so many companies fail to maximize price increases. Sales professionals and their sales leaders feel frustrated, and unhappy customers are lost along the way. Sales professionals are ill-prepared to talk with customers about price increases because they don't get trained, and there are also no resources to help them develop the skills to do so. If you scour the internet for information on how to sell price increases, you'll be hard-pressed to find any system, process, or framework for these crucial conversations. That is why this new book from my friend, Jeb Blount, Mr. JB himself, is so important. As far as I can tell, no one in history has ever written an entire book on how to approach B2B customers with price increases. But that's Jeb. Grab a piece of the sales puzzle, blow it out, and show you exactly how to do it. This is why I wasn't surprised when I learned that he was writing Selling the Price Increase, because quite frankly, it is a book that only Jeb could write. If you've ever had to deliver price increase news to a customer, then you know it isn't easy. Yet, when sold effectively, customers accept price increases, remain loyal, and often buy even more. In Selling the Price Increase, Jeb gives you exactly what you need to successfully sell and defend price increases without losing your customers. Now, Jeb knows sales. He is one of the most gifted sales strategists of our generation. Pick a subject, sales discipline, or situation, and Jeb has it down. Studied, done it, understands it. This is why when Jeb talks, salespeople pay attention, and you should too.
So maybe you recognize the actors that I hired.
I do. Anthony, Mark, and Victor.
Those are like your biggest keynoters at Outbound.
That's true.
So it wasn't hard to, so that was the voice of Victor Antonio himself, who wrote the foreword. And then we also had Anthony Annarino and Mark Hunter, who have both been on the podcast, and they're, you know, I guess it's, the four of you are the top keynoters at your conference, and they happily agreed to do that, and they had a lot of fun. Of course, Anthony and Mark were you know, bickering amongst themselves because they immediately jumped into the role of sales manager and salesperson. So, but because Anthony's next book is about sales management, he got to be the sales manager. So
very good.
Yeah, hope you enjoyed that. So
I did.
Now, just so people will know, we won't have time to get into all of the book, but the book is in six parts. Let me just tell you what they are. The first one is a discussion about how to manage the fears, the worries, and the disruptive emotions you feel when approaching price increase conversations with customers, which I think is probably the most important, because if you can't get your mindset right, the rest of these things are going to be even more difficult. Part two dives into the keys to protecting relationships and retaining customers. Part three teaches you a repeatable framework for targeting, planning, and setting the stage for crucial price increase conversations. Part four focuses on how to build messaging, like we talked about, that reduces resistance and facilitates acceptance. Part five gives frameworks and tactics for handling price increase objections and negotiating better price increase outcomes. And the last one teaches frontline sales leaders, I guess, and business owners, how to lead a price increase initiative and coach price increase sales skills. So having said that, Jeb, I remember in yet another one of your books that I've read, you talk about how companies will often hire your company and they'll say, all we need help with is closing. or all we need help with is overcoming objections at the end. To which you've written entire books saying, well, it doesn't work that way. You have to bake it in from the very beginning. Overcome the objections beforehand. Work on things that makes the closing easier. And I thought the same thing was with selling the price increase, where a lot of it has to do with taking care of your customers in the first place and some other things like that. So I just wanted to caution folks that this isn't some little trick that happens at the very end. It really is a process. And if you're not following the process, you're really going to have a lot of difficulty. But I want to talk about the money side of it. I know that there are CFOs listening. I recently learned, I heard from a CFO who listens to this, and ask you about what you write on page five, which is nothing else in the business-to-business sales arsenal protects the health of your company like price increases. Explain or remind listeners why price increases matter so much, perhaps more than they realize.
Well, you just said this. I mean, part of the four P's in marketing is pricing, and pricing drives everything in an organization. If your pricing is too low, then you've sub-optimized profits, and in some cases, you can be losing money, and which is a very, very bad thing. So in most businesses, free cash flow is king. It matters. Now, there are clearly some businesses out there where all you want to do is grow, and I think we can all agree that in our current environment, that's being diminished by investors who are looking for profit. So if you want to drive profit to the bottom line, the easiest, fastest way to do that is to raise the prices on your customers, because it doesn't really cost you anything to do it. And that drop through is massive. In fact, if you consider the drop through to the bottom line, so the profit, operating profit impact of, say, new business versus a price increase, there's about a 400% higher impact to the bottom line for a price increase versus new business, because there's not so much cost involved in it. There's a lot of cost involved in acquiring a customer. So whether you're doing a price increase across your customer base, or these are targeted price increases. So for example, you've got account managers out there and you're looking at their accounts and you're trying to optimize the prices on accounts that maybe you acquired at a lower price than you wanted to, just to get the business, get the new logo in. Every time you get a price increase, that one percentage point, that's going to drop through to the bottom line a lot more than if you get an individual price increase. And Douglas, for me as an individual salesperson, this wasn't something that I truly understood. So if you're a marketer, for example, and you're dealing with your salespeople and you're saying, go get a price increase, your salespeople are typically pushing back because they feel like a price increase is something that you're doing to your customer versus something that you're doing for your company. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't until I owned a P&L that I really got it and understood that the price increase is something that I'm doing for my company. Because the more profitable the company, the more resources we have to sell more, the more money we have to invest in the business, the more we're able to do for our employees. Everything gets better when we're more profitable. And the easiest way to increase profits is to increase your prices.
Yes, you're right. A 1% increase in sales volume will produce 3.3% in profit. However, a 1% increase in price, when sales volume remains stable, delivers an 11.1% increase in operating profit. TV advertising is a powerful channel for business growth, and it's a counterintuitive solution for businesses frustrated by the rising costs of digital marketing. But the traditional process for launching TV campaigns is expensive, time-consuming, and complex. That's why marketing architects flipped the traditional process on its head. With all-inclusive TV advertising, they invest their own money to produce, analyze, and optimize your TV campaign. All you pay for is media, setting you up for rapid growth at a significant cost advantage. This approach to TV is so revolutionary, they wrote a book about it. It's called All-Inclusive TV, How Booming Brands Are Reimagining TV Advertising. It explores how a variety of brands are using TV to transform their businesses and how you can do the same. For a free copy of the book, visit this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com or visit marketingarchitects.com/book and tell them you heard about it on the Marketing Book Podcast. So you mentioned somebody say, hey, go get a price increase. Let's remind folks why salespeople hate price increases. It freaks them out more than the CEO may realize.
Well, I mean, if you think about all the things that salespeople push back on, like cold calling, for example, which is why a lot of CMOs hire us, right? Because they're producing leads and the salespeople don't want to pick up the phone and call the leads. There's things that salespeople hate. There's the CRM, there's administrative work, there's meetings, there's cold calling. But at the top of the pantheon of things that salespeople hate is price increases. Because for the salesperson, their job essentially is to go make customers happy. Their job is to go out and get customers to buy into them so that they can close the deal. Salespeople are brilliant at discounting in order to get a new logo in. But for salespeople, price increases feel like conflict. And they are conflict because nobody likes a price increase. The salespeople don't want to sell them and customers don't want to buy them. And you know that when you walk into a customer with a price increase or you present a customer with a price increase, you know they're going to push back. You know they're not going to be happy. You know there's going to be conflict and rejection. And it is natural for human beings, whether they're in sales or not in sales, to avoid conflict. But for salespeople in particular, you know, it makes them feel like, you know, now they're at odds with their customer. And I know it because I've been there. You know, I've been in a situation where a boss walked in and said, hey, you got to go get price increases, you know, and I'm agonizing over which customer is going to talk to. And the customers that I've got deep relationships with, I don't want to go talk to them. I want to go make them happy. And I know a price increase isn't going to make them happy.
Yeah, it's like figuring out which employees you need to fire.
It's a very, very similar way of looking at things.
Yeah. Well, you've got a whole chapter on the, you know, the fears. And let's talk about fear. You write it's not uncommon for people to fear rejection more than death. Tell us about the military recruiters, combat veterans you've trained, and their fear of rejection.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I mean, if you think about the two greatest fears for human beings, it's dying and it's being ostracized or being rejected, being kicked out of a group. And this is baked into our DNA. And this is from, you know, from our very beginning as human beings, we have lived and worked and survived in groups. So being kicked out of the group is the most horrible thing that could possibly happen to us. And I work with every branch of the military to help them recruit. And when I'm spending time with military recruiters, no matter where I am, you know, what you'll notice is, and we'll always ask the question, like, you know, you guys, you're afraid to pick up a phone and call a teenager. And they're like, yeah. And I go, well, you've been in combat. Like, I mean, people have been shooting at you.
Some of you have purple hearts. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. You've been injured. And they will tell you, they would rather, I've got this on video. They will tell you, I would rather have someone shoot at me than make a cold call. because they're afraid of being rejected. So think about that. I mean, that makes no logical, rational sense that you would run into a firefight willingly with someone trying to kill you, but you were unwilling to pick up a phone, call a teenager because you were that afraid of rejection. So when, especially as you're an executive, as you are thinking about sending your salespeople in to get price increases, salespeople are better equipped at dealing with rejection and conflict than, say, soldiers who were trained to shoot people but not to cold call people. Mm-hmm. But still, your salespeople, this is something that they avoid at all costs. So it's so important that, and in part six of the book, we talk about this from a leadership standpoint, that leaders are in the trenches, that they are with their salespeople, that they are working with them on the messaging, and that they're helping them deal with these fears. And, you know, I wrote the book for salespeople, so I teach salespeople how to get past some of these fears in the book. But the fact is that you have to get price increases because it's important for business. And the best people to get the price increases are your salespeople. And we'll add to that your customer success people, your account managers, but your customer-facing team members. And for them, this is like the hardest thing that they can possibly do. And you absolutely cannot, you know, whitewash that. You have to acknowledge the fact that this is hard. It is rejection dense. It is conflict dense work. So having a system and a process and messaging and getting your people prepared is going to be critical to making sure that you maximize the price increase. Otherwise, your salespeople are going to make a lot of mistakes. They're going to make customers mad. You're going to lose customers. They're going to come back and tell you the customer's not going to pay the price increase, and your price increase initiative is going to be sub-optimized or fail. And when you're counting on those numbers to drive your profit margins, that's a big problem.
Yes. So those combat veterans, they had been trained extensively on what to do, you know, how to go toward the sound of the fire, the gunfire. But let's talk about the rejection. What are things that people can do to become similarly more rejection proof?
Well, the term is called obstacle immunity, but essentially when there's an obstacle in your way, and it could be, let's say, a wall you have to climb over. I mean, it could be, you know, people shooting at you. It could be making a cold call. But when there's an obstacle in your way, that obstacle at first looks really, really big. It looks insurmountable. And it can be almost overwhelming because you're afraid of it. But as you face that obstacle over and over and over again, that obstacle's emotional hold on you begins to diminish, and the size of the obstacle, the roadblock, looks a lot smaller. So anything that you've ever done that scares you at first, after you do it for a while, doesn't scare you as much anymore. So think if you know, the first time you ever jumped out of an airplane, which I did, it scared me to death.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't scare me so much anymore. The first time that I went, you know, I got thrown into the water when I was learning how to swim, that was the most awful thing in the world. But right. Now, you know, I willingly go jump in the water and swim.
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing with any type of rejection. The best way to deal with it is to become rejection proof, is to face your obstacles. And so one of the easy things for people to do, especially if you fear rejection, is like just go out into the world and make an intentional effort every single day to go face rejection. And one of the fun ways of doing that is just to go ask strangers for weird things. Right. And then, you know,
like Jia Jiang did.
Yeah, like Jia Jiang did. And uh-huh. in his book, Rejection Proof, he chronicles his 100 days of rejection. But that's an easy way to start getting yourself a little bit of a callus when it comes to being rejected. Now, the same thing, by the way, works with price increases. The more your salespeople and the more a salesperson is out having those conversations with customers, especially when you give them a system, especially uh-huh. when you give them good messaging, the easier it gets to have those conversations, and the more collaborative those conversations become, because we begin to take the emotion out of the conversation and it really becomes more business.
Yes. And you've got examples throughout the book of clients you've worked with, and they came back and said, wow, that wasn't so bad at all. It worked. You know, and you're probably thinking, yeah, what do I know? I'm just writing this book about it, but you got to do it once to understand that. But I want to ask another question about head trash, okay? And there was a great quote from Mark Twain who said, I've experienced many terrible things in my life, a few of which actually happened. Explain what you mean when you write that the greatest failures in price increase conversations are often self-inflicted.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you think about our natural desire to avoid conflict, mm-hmm. so we just start there, then anything that feels like it's an obstacle, like conflict or being rejected, it has a tendency to cause us to worry and cause us to ruminate over it and think about it. And the bad thing with that is that it causes us to then procrastinate on it, right? So we're already emotionally, you know, involved in our worry and our fear, and because of that, we don't want to do it. It looks big, it looks ugly, so we put it off, which makes it even worse. And there are legitimate fears. I mean, you know, salespeople for the most part fear that they're going to lose their customer. That can be legitimate. But if you fear it enough, you can do things like procrastinate that can make your customers really mad and cause you to lose your customer. Mm-hmm. You know, we fear that the customer is going to bring up, like, say, past service issues. Like, we made a mistake in the past. And they probably will. You know, the customer is going to do everything possible in their power not to get the price increase. We fear that the customer is going to reject us and going to yell at us, going to scream at us. We fear that we're going to lose orders. We fear that we're going to damage relationships. That was a big deal for me, you know, back in, you know, my mid-20s when I was having to go out and get price increases for my customers. I'd built these deep relationships with my customers, something I was very good at. That's what the company paid me to do, mm-hmm. was to deepen those relationships. I feared that I would hurt those relationships in the process. And because those fears build up, that does, like you said, cause head trash, which then can create situations where we can make some pretty bad mistakes with our customers when we're having those conversations about the price increases.
Mm. Well, let me ask you yet another question. You explain what you mean when you write, your customer's emotional experience while working with you is a more consistent predictor of price increase outcomes than any other variable.
Well, for you and the customer, it's emotional. So when you take a price increase to a customer, we want it to be collaborative. We want it to be around business and business case and the reasons why a price increase is necessary. But it's still emotional. I mean, it's emotional for the customer primarily because if you think about getting a price increase, in a lot of cases, it feels like you're losing something. It feels like maybe you're being taken advantage of or you're being mm-hmm. you're being used, and your guard is up. And I think for a lot of customers, it's also, how's it going to impact their business? Because the price increase that you put in place is going to improve your profitability, but it's going to diminish the profitability of your customer. So somebody's winning, somebody's losing in this game. And that doesn't mean that, you know, there's always a loser, because if you're adding things on or if you're, you know, delivering great quality for them, then it's worth it. I'm just, you know, just thinking about it from the standing in the customer's shoes.
Yeah.
So when salespeople approach price increases the wrong way, so they procrastinate to the last minute, that creates an emotional rift. Or if the salesperson hasn't built a relationship with their customer, so they don't have any relationship at all, and the very first time that they ever show up for a conversation, they're having a price increase conversation, that's a pretty bad thing that can create an emotional rift. Or in some cases, when the salesperson is so fearful and so insecure about the price increase that they show up and they're already on the defensive, or they look weak. Like, that happens for me in a lot of cases where I'll have an account manager, one of my vendors, show up with a price increase, and I'm going to push back hard like any other business owner is going to be, and then the more insecure they are, the more likely I know that I'm going to win that argument, because they're just going to go away. So when salespeople show up and they've got great messaging, when they are relaxed, assertive, and confident, when they're calm and cool, when they're nice, when they're respectful, when they're making their business case like a professional, their customer's not going to be happy about the price increase. No customer's ever going to go, oh my God, Douglas, thank you so much for showing up here and giving me this price increase. That's not what's going to happen, but the customer's much more likely to accept the price increase without resentment or contempt. And that's really what we want, right? We want to get the price increase. We want the customer to accept it. And in some cases where you have a really large customer, they may negotiate the price increase, but negotiation simply means that they've accepted it. So what we want to make sure that we're doing as we approach customers with price increases, or if they're approaching us and we're defending the price increase after marketing, say, sent the price increase out, that we're managing our emotions so that we can influence the emotions of the other person. Because if they feel emotionally okay about the price increase, they're typically going to go, okay, well, I'm going to take it, and they're going to move on, and you're not going to lose your customer, and everything's going to be okay.
Yes, and one line from the book that's repeated several times, and I can even remember seeing it up on a big screen at Outbound. In this case, you write, in every price increase conversation, the person who exerts the greatest emotional control has the highest probability of achieving their desired outcome. But before we move on, I just want to drill down one more time into the mindset of the customer. And I just thought this was really interesting. On page 54, where you write, step into your customer's shoes for just a moment and consider what is truly important for them. Perhaps you think that they want low prices, savings, value for the money, or a fair return on investment. While these things and more are important, it's not what they really want. Talk about what they really do want.
I mean, they want to feel that they weren't manipulated. They want to feel that they're doing a good job, that they're doing worthwhile work. They want to feel that that they've been able to negotiate the best deal for themselves. Like, they want to feel like they they were equal to you in that moment. They want to feel like you're doing a good job for their boss. But I mean, mostly they just want to feel contentment. I mean, they want to feel that. That everything is okay. So that, and those things are purely emotional.
Mm-hmm.
They want to feel like they're winning. That's why I say when you bring a price increase in, the buyers are your customers' natural reaction is something's being taken away from me.
Yes. Yes. Or you're taking advantage of them.
You're taking advantage of me. They want to feel like, you know, they're not being taken advantage of. They want to feel like they're part of it. I mean, that's the things that you described are all logical things, and what I'm describing are emotional things, how people feel about things. So, for example, when you're negotiating a price increase, we want to protect the price increase points, because we described earlier the drop through on those price increase points is massive. And you lose 1 point of a price increase because you negotiated away, the long-term cumulative impact of that loss is pretty large for a company. So one of the things that you might do, for example, in a negotiation is you give away funny money. Funny money is something that doesn't really cost you anything. Like, you could provide extra training for them in exchange for the price increase point. They feel content. They feel good because they got something from you for the price increase, which emotionally causes them to lean in and say, okay, I'm willing to accept this.
Yeah. You know, whenever I'm buying something, my greatest fear is that I'm going to be taken advantage of. It's rarely about the price. After reading your book, I thought about that. It's like, yeah, no, I have this overwhelming fear of being taken advantage of. So, Jeb, as I was reading through the book, this one song kept going through my head. What have you done for me lately? That was Janet Jackson, What Have You Done For Me Lately? And Jeb, just so you know, my first name ain't Baby. It's Janet, Miss Jackson, if you're nasty. But I digress. So you mentioned earlier that if the first contact you have with a customer is to discuss a price increase, you're not doing it right. In fact, you say it's a very stupid way to initiate a relationship and a quick trip to losing your customer. Tell us about McKinsey.
Yeah, so McKinsey was an account manager that worked for one of my vendors, and it was one of the largest software vendors that I work with, and a big part of powering up our company. And we'd had a great account manager with this company who took care of us, who we loved, who we enjoyed. And this account manager got promoted. A new account manager came in, and
The guy. He was Alexander. He always took care of you. He was very helpful.
Yeah, I loved my account manager. He did a great job for us. We bought a lot more. We expanded the business with him, gave him more money, and he did a good job. He got promoted. I mean, it's what the people are supposed to do in their lives. So we get this new account manager named McKinsey, and we haven't heard like anything from her. Like, a month goes by, 2 months goes by, 3 months goes by.
You had reached out to her, right?
Yeah, right in the middle of the middle of the summer, and we had a problem. We sent her a note. She forwarded the note to someone on the tech team, but never checked to see if everything was okay. I was getting miffed at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got into November, and I get this phone call, and it's from McKinsey. First time I've ever heard from her. You know, we had set up a meeting. She comes on. She's already on the defensive. She's like this terse, stern, you know, tone of her voice. It just was, you know, was not nice, and informed me that we were getting a massive price increase and that it would be taking place the next month.
Nice.
Yeah. Needless to say, I was angry. So I contacted pretty much every human being that was a leader in their company, including the chairman of the board. I contacted their biggest competitor. I started working on leaving them. I, you know, one of their executives finally called back and I explained what I was doing. That, of course, set off a firestorm where they were jumping through hoops to keep my business. And they ended up giving me a pretty significant price reduction to stay. But it was, it destroyed their trust that I had with that company, and it's still destroyed. I can tell you that they have done some good work over the past year to try to rebuild some of that, that relationship. But this is like 3 years ago, but I don't
trust. You're still ready to leave.
I've got a plan. If they make another mistake like that, then I'm leaving. And the purpose of the story in the book was just, in some cases, and we just finished doing a big training with 700 salespeople on selling the price increase, and a number of those salespeople had been given new accounts. So they've never met the account, and that happens from time to time because account managers come, they go, accounts get shifted around, you got new territories, and the dumbest thing that you can do as an account manager is make the first conversation you have with your customer about a price increase, something that they don't want to buy and you don't want to sell.
Yeah.
And I know that's tough sometimes because people say, well, I don't have a choice. I got to get this price increase in. I get that. So some of that's on leadership, you know, make sure that you're giving your people plenty of time ahead of time. But for the salespeople, because you don't want to do the price increase, you start procrastinating. And like McKinsey did, you waited to the last minute. I mean, this wasn't something that just popped up on our radar. This was something she'd have been talking about, talking to us about a long time ago. I mean, I have some account managers who are telling me, a year ahead of time, hey, when your contract comes up, we're going to have to raise your prices. I mean, at least I know about it.
Yeah.
And by the time the contract comes around, I'm still not happy, but I'm sort of bought in a little bit. I mean, I'm probably negotiate a few things out of it. But the fact that she showed up at the last minute, that's what happens to a lot of salespeople. So you just want to make sure that if you've never met your customer, go meet your customer, go set the stage, go have a conversation, do an account review, find some problem you can solve, do something to build some type of relationship so that they at least know who you are before you show up on their doorstep and you drop a bomb on them.
Yes, absolutely. And you write about how the most effective way to get price increases without losing customers is to just manage your accounts. That was the biggest head slap for me. But, if you ever wanted to do a musical version of your book, you would include Janet, but you would also include
Breaking Up This Hard to Do.
Now, in the book, you talk about how, I guess, a lot of salespeople and businesses overlook just how hard it is for your customers to break up with you. And you include some ways that you can sort of play the status quo card. Do you find that that's overlooked? And can you talk about how to remind customers that breaking up is hard to do?
Sure. Well, if you think about the story we just talked about with McKinsey, I was leaving and their leadership team convinced me to stay. Now, that conversation and the reason that I stayed was because I didn't want to leave. Like, it's hard to leave. It's hard to unwind a relationship. So for sales professionals on the new logo side, the biggest competitor that you have is the status quo, right? It's convincing a customer or a prospect to quit doing what they're currently doing and move to you.
Yes.
And that's the biggest uphill battle you have. That's why you go through an entire sales process. On the price increase side of things, with your existing customers, the greatest asset you have and our tool or psychological tool that you have in your favor is the status quo. So on one end, like I'm trying to go sell a new customer, I'm battling the status quo. And on the other side, when I'm trying to retain my customers, I'm accentuating the status quo. And all the status quo bias is that basically human beings, this is all human beings, we do not like to change. And we don't like to change because change is risky. So the status quo, even when the status quo seems untenable, the status quo is always going to be the greater magnet than change. It's going to hold people back from change. So what you want to do as a salesperson when you're, you know, working with your customers to do price increases is build a business case. You know, talk to them about all the value that you've delivered. Explain to them the extra things that you do for them. Help them understand how interwoven you are into their world. Mm-hmm. You know, and like you said, manage your accounts. I mean, the most impactful thing that you can do is just take care of your customers. When your customer feels that you care about them, when the customer feels that you're in there with them and you're working with them, and the customer, you know, gets that you're constantly, you know, involved in their business, trying to help them solve problems, even when you think that maybe you're a commodity, but when you're there working with them, when they start considering leaving you, and they will, like, mm-hmm. if you bring a price increase, they'll consider it. They'll think to themselves, well, maybe I should go look at competitors. But when that happens, they have to go back and take a look at the cost benefit of leaving you. And in almost every single case, they're going to come to the conclusion that it ain't worth it. It's not worth it to leave. It's too much trouble. It's too much effort to move. And like starting that process of say seeking and looking for a new vendor, that's hard. It's emotional. It's expensive. So as a salesperson, in an account manager, when you're working with your customers, the more that you can help your customer become wedded to the status quo, that looking at the world and changing is hard, the more likely you are to continue to do business with you, which de-risks the fact that you might lose your customer or lose the orders when you bring in a price increase.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. It also reminds me of the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know.
That's exactly right. And that's a simple heuristic, mm-hmm. that is pure, it is so human, right? That's exactly what you want to help your customers get.
Mm-hmm. Or remind them of that. So Jeb, I want to talk about this technological invention called a telephone. I think a lot of people in sales may not, or at least the younger ones, are not familiar that their little device, actually, you can actually call someone on it, if my kids are any example. And I want to talk about the pros and cons of using telephone versus email with price increases. And on page 106, you write, there's no doubt that email is an essential tool. It is a fast, easy channel for communicating with customers. It is also a fast and easy way to damage customer relationships when defending price increases. Can you share the story about one of your clients where what happened when some of them used the telephone and others used a more asynchronous way, like a message, like an email?
Yeah, I mean, we just go back to human conflict avoidance. So defending a price increase simply means that the marketing organization basically sent out a notice and told all the customers you're getting a price increase. In those situations, almost always the sales organization and the customer service organization and the account managers, you're taking incoming fire. The customers are coming to you and saying, I just got this notice, I'm getting a price increase, I'm not paying this. Like, that's what's happening.
Yeah, I thought we had a thing here.
Yeah, they got a question about it. So we have a client who had an inbound or an inside sales team, and they were, you know, they basically were tasked with defending the price increase. They'd given their salespeople some leeway to work with some customers. So if a customer is particularly pissed off, then they could back out the price increase. So they had, you know, they didn't want to lose their customers, but essentially they had said, everybody's getting a price increase, you have to defend it. And we did an analysis with this particular client after the price increase initiative had gone through to take a look at which of their reps had held the price increase and which of their reps had allowed that price increase to escape them because they had backed it out from some of the customers. And what we found was that the reps that had a 90% or higher hold rate on the price increase – their move was when a customer came in and left a message, or they had sent an email, and a lot of customers come in via email or come in via chat, that they would pick up the phone and call the customer and have a conversation. The reps that were, you know, way lower than that, you know, in the 70 percentile range of holding the price increases, their first move was to send an email. So they would go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth with the customer on an email. And in a lot of cases, what we found when we looked at the email logs and we listened to recordings is that when they would finally get on the telephone with a customer was when the customer was exasperated, frustrated, mad, irritated. And so they would finally call the customer. Well, the customer's pissed off and they're screaming at them. And in those situations, the reps would back out the price increase. And the real, you know, the real lesson in this is talk with people. Like, this is human. You and I have been alluding to this all along, that this is emotional for the rep, emotional mm-hmm. for the customer. So first of all, no drive-by price increases. Like, don't just
that's
drop
a good term, yeah. Lap,
right?
Drive-by, yeah.
Don't send it via email. If you're doing a price increase, don't respond via email. If someone has a question about a price increase, pick up the phone, have a conversation. I'm not saying that it's easy, because we don't want the conflict, but it is the key to managing price increases in a way that causes customers to accept them, because then you can explain it. Then you can deal with their objections. Then you can let them talk it out. I mean, a lot of cases, all they really need to do is just to vent a little bit. And then they'll go, okay, well, I guess I got to pay it. But they just want to vent.
Yeah,
and
sure.
They can't vent via email. And if they are venting via email, it's usually really, really ugly email.
Oh, yeah. Pick up the phone, folks. And that applies to prospecting, but that's a different episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. So let's jump ahead. There's a great tool, one of many in the book. And actually, I'm going to include links to some of the other things that you offer to folks, templates and workbooks and so forth, on this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. But let's talk about the price increase risk profile. I mean, I could just envision this going up on a big whiteboard where the team kind of works through it. Talk about that, and then tell us a story of how you were able to get a 100% price increase from a typical client from hell.
Yeah, so what the risk profile is a matrix that looks at the quality of the relationship, the quality of your service and product delivery, and the fit of the customer, and you know their ability to leave you. So there are alternatives of you know, leaving your company. So when we look at the quality of the service, if the quality of the service is high, if you're delivering high value, then that's a good thing, because what we know to be true about human beings is that when the quality is high, when they feel that they're getting good quality for their money, that they're much more likely to accept your price increase. Then we look at the quality of the relationship. So if you have a good relationship, it's deep, it's long, you've been working with your customer for a really long time. It's wide. You've got a lot of relationships in the organization. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing for you. If you have shallow relationships, it's a bad thing for you, because the customer's not as invested in the emotional connection with you. And then we look at alternatives and your fit for the organization. But alternatives are for the company that you're raising the prices on, what are their alternatives for doing business with you? If they have few alternatives, then you have a very low risk of losing that customer. If they have tons of alternatives, then you're at a higher risk of losing the customer. So inside the fit matrix, what we allow you to do is to, and there's a playbook that you can find inside the price increase book as well, but you can get in and you can take a look at your customers and do it sort of an objective risk profile of that customer, which then informs how you're going to approach them. So if you have a very low risk of losing your customer, marketing might just take over and send an email out and say, everybody's getting a price increase, or you just put the price increase on the next invoice. If you've got a medium risk, you might approach the customer more proactively, but you're basically going to present the price increase to them and then see how they push back. And then if there's a really high risk, and especially if it's a really big account, then you're probably going to go build your business case. Like, you need to sit down with them and have a collaborative meeting where you explain the price increase and what's the reason for the price increase and why the price increase is necessary, because that matters. So the risk profile is a beautiful tool for taking each of the customers in your account base and making a decision about how you're going to approach them, building out your strategy. And this is especially important for account managers when you're looking at contract renewals or you're looking at optimizing prices on a customer that came in a little bit too low when you acquired them. And along with that is just understanding I've got a what I call a fit matrix in this particular section of the book, which is understanding where the customer fits for you in, you know, in your account base. And so the story that you're, you know, that you're asking about is a really, really large customer. I'm a small company, and this is a, you know, Fortune 100 company. And we had signed a deal with them the year before. We were so happy about it. We celebrated. It was like, you know, the best thing in the world for a small company like mine to sign a big old logo like this. And about 3 months in, we realized that we were getting hammered. Like, we made a mistake.
You described it as a soul-sucking experience.
It was a soul-sucking relationship. And when I say soul-sucking, it wasn't like these people were horrible people. They were, I mean, they were just doing their job. Mm-hmm. It was, the problem was, it was like a 20-to-1 relationship. There were 20 people on their team that were all asking for things, and there was one of us trying to solve this, you know, solve their problems and service them. And towards the end of the agreement, we had to suck it up. We signed a contract, but I mean, they were just taking all the joy out of life. My entire organization hated working with them. So everybody in my company voted to fire them. Like, you go there. Like, I had to go like present the renewal for the contract. So I had to get on an airplane. You go there and you tell them we don't want to work with them anymore. Now, as a small business owner, I've got a lot of fear. The fear is this is huge revenue. And a lot of times when you're a small business owner, you get connected to revenue, not profit. And, yes. And I was. I mean, I was emotionally connected to this is a lot of revenue on the top line, not realizing that not only was it soul-sucking, but it was profit-sucking in the relationship.
Sometimes there's a connection there.
Yeah, but you also don't want to burn bridges. Like, burning bridges.
Right, and they were really well-known. They were
well-known. Big logo, and by the way, the people that you're working with there, you don't know if they're going to go work for someone else. So what I did was I went in with a proposal that was a good proposal, a good business case for the proposal, but my bottom line pricing was 100% higher than they were currently paying. And it was one of the greatest conversations in my sales life. But the buyer like looks at the proposal and looks at me and says, I mean, this is face to face. Like, you know, we're sitting across a table with each other in a conference room. And like, how can you justify this? And I said, y'all are just hard to work with. And I started explaining, like, you know, all the things that they ask us to do. A lot of those things.
You remain calm, though. You remain calm.
I was calm. I was cool. I was nice. Yeah. You know, I was professional. I gave him a proposal for how we could continue the relationship. And the buyer just said, yep, you're right. We're pretty hard to work with. And then signed the paper. And it just tells you that, you know, a lot of times we fear having those conversations because of conflict. And I don't want to, you know, gloss over the fact that I was, you know, trepidatious walking through the door. I was not looking forward to the conversation. I was afraid that they were going to yell at me. I would have been a whole lot easier just to say, you know what, we're just not going to play, and y'all just, you know, we're going to take our you know, our ball and go home. It was hard to do, but it was a great lesson, and that is that if you believe in your business and you believe in what you do, and you have soul sucking customers that take away the joy of doing business, it's okay to go raise your prices. In some cases, they'll go away, and that's fine. Basically, by raising your prices, you're introducing them to your competitor. But in other cases, it'll get their attention, and they'll say, well, why are you doing this? And you can explain it to them, and they say, well, what if I change? And you can go, okay, well, if you change, maybe we can change the game. But in other cases, they'll say, okay, totally get it. And then, you know, we run this, you know, run into this all the time when we're working with our own clients and we're teaching them the selling the price increase system, where the reps will come back and go, the customer asked me, what took you so long? Like, you know, the customer, right. The customer knew that they were getting a good deal. They knew that they were, you know, they were underpaying for your services, and they understood that. But as a business person, you have to be aware of the fit. So I just use this four frame matrix. On the upper right hand corner is easy to work with, high profit. That's the customer that I want. Mm-hmm. Below that is on the lower right hand level is easy to work with, low profit. I'll take those two. I don't want too many of them, but if they're not creating a lot of problems in my organization, that's fine. Mm-hmm. On the upper left hand corner is hard to work with, high profit. So if you're really, really hard to work with, there's a tax that you have to pay in order to be my customer.
Like and then, this example you just gave. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you're hard to work with and low profit, then I have to raise your rates or I have to get rid of you. But if I can raise your rates and move you into high profit, hard to work with, I'm okay. I don't resent you anymore. I'm making a lot of money and I'm willing to jump through hoops and do things as long as I'm getting paid.
Yeah, you just need to move it at least into one of the other three squares. Yeah, that's great.
So
that's great.
I just when you're sitting down and you're agonizing over who am I going to go get price increases from, it's an easy way to say I can focus on this segment. So I can segment my customers into four buckets. I'm going to focus on hard to work with, low profit first, and then if you drop them into the fit matrix or to the risk profile matrix, then at least you can get a better understanding of where you stand with them and why this matters to you. Because in some cases, you maybe find that you've got a hard to work with, low profit that really has no alternative to doing business with you. Mm-hmm. And in that case, you have all the leverage.
Right. And that's where this other matrix helps you out. And the other thing is, there may be a lot of companies that still don't know how profitable their different clients are. And you need to do that as well. So, Jeb, you've been around horses all your life. My wife is an equestrian. She's a high-level dressage competitor. She's one score away from Grand Prix level, which is the highest.
Wow.
We'll see. I think she has a horse show this weekend. We'll see what happens. So she's one of you people, okay? with the horses.
Yes. So you recognize that all a horse is basically is a black hole that you throw money into.
Yeah, yeah. And I had thought when she gave up sailboat racing that things were going to get better. But apparently this is actually worse. So if there's another one out there, Jeb, do me a favor and don't tell her about it. But back to your book, you talk about how when discussing price increases with customers, the message, what you say and how you say it, matters. Can you talk about emotional contagion and what we can learn from horses about messaging the price increase?
Yeah, so when we think about emotional contagion, for human beings, right, we have the ability to feel what other people are feeling. It's like these invisible vibrations that surround us. And this isn't me just saying that. This is science. And you know this to be true because you run into people all day long and you make decisions about how they're feeling based on what you see on their face, their micro expressions, the tone of their voice, their body language. So when you're delivering a message about a price increase, the most powerful emotional foundation for you is relaxed, assertive confidence. People lean into that. We want to be around confident people. So you have to manage not just the words that you say, the message, but also your nonverbal words, like the emotions that you're transferring to the other person. So there are emotional words and there are, actual emotions. And I just use the analogy of horses because I am a big horse person. I've been on horses my entire life. Every horse has its own personality. But the thing about a horse is horses are big. And they can be dangerous because they're big. And a horse can kill you because they're big. And the thing about horses is
that a horse can throw you off.
A horse can throw you off, and a horse can take advantage of you, mm-hmm. and a horse can do a lot of things that are, that are bad behavior. And with a horse, essentially because you're smaller than the horse, you have to be bigger on the inside than you are on the outside. And the horse has to believe, right, because you're bigger on the inside, that you're bigger than the horse on the outside. And so relax assertive confidence with a horse, and I don't know if you had let your wife read that passage in the book, but I bet she would agree with you that your demeanor around a horse has everything to do with how the horse responds to you.
Oh, and she agreed completely. And then she said, "Why are you reading this book?" And I told her, and she said, "You have a podcast?"
That's great. So I just use that analogy because I just think that we have to recognize that, like horses, and our ability to manage our own emotion around a horse and influence the horse's behavior, the same thing happens with customers. Your customer's emotional experience as they walk through this price increase journey with you is a more consistent predictor of outcome of any other variable. Right. So when you manage your emotions, you're able to influence the emotions of other people.
Okay, but now it's time to, once again, light Jeb Blunt's fuse, okay? This is something that grinds his gears. And I liked it too. So, Jeb, you know, I may be stupid, but I hate being treated that way. Talk about what infuriates you related to communicating price increases. And I'll give you one to get you started. The term updating prices.
Yeah, it's these euphemisms that organizations use for price increases. I got one the other day ago. It was a price adjustment. I mean, am I a moron? It's a price adjustment. It's a freaking price increase.
Yeah.
So, and this, by the way, is a message for marketers, because marketers are the ones who come up with this stuff. Salespeople don't do this. Salespeople, for the most part, when they're rolling their eyes at groups of marketers, and I used to be in this situation where I was a salesperson who got shoved into a marketing department to teach marketers how to use language that salespeople use in front of their customers. I mean, salespeople, when they're talking to customers, would prefer to use just real language. It's a price increase. Marketers have a tendency to use these euphemisms to explain price increases because we're too insecure to just tell the customer what it is. So super important that we don't treat customers like they're stupid and that we don't use these euphemisms, that we just explain things for what they are.
Yes. And that's why you say, stop saying it's a price change, an update, adjustment, a modification, a reevaluation, or an amendment. It's a price increase, people. Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. Okay, I'm sorry. I guess we didn't have to go there. But Jeb, earlier you mentioned the narratives, which is really, really helpful for the marketing folks listening. Can you explain what, or just talk about what some of the price increase narratives are that work well? I know you talk about how the value narrative actually is really the most powerful.
Yeah, so let's start with some science. So when scientists study the human brain, and the human brain's willingness to accept a price increase, there are basically three things. It is the relative size of a price increase. So if a price increase is low, you know, small compared to the size of the spend, typically people are going to be okay with it. It's just a nuisance and they're willing to pay it. So for the most part, on those type of price increases, you're just going to send the price increase out and then defend it. They'll also pay more when they think it's fair. Like if they feel like the price increase is fair to them, then they're okay. And they'll pay more when they believe in the value. Like, so if they believe they're getting good value for the money, this links back to the human status quo bias, right? They're getting good value. They're much more likely to accept the price increase, not move on. So the narratives are these different ways of explaining price increases based on the circumstance, and by the way, can be woven together. One of the narratives that we're having to use right now in today's economy, a lot of cases, is the economic fairness narrative. This is a narrative you're typically going to use when the customer is going to be paying the same thing or paying more for the same thing that they were already getting, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to explain to them, why do I have to pay more for what I'm already getting? That's going to be an economic fairness narrative. You have to pay more because we're paying more to service you. These are the things that are happening to us. So because we know that human beings have an innate sense of fairness, once you can explain that to people, they're much more likely, the probability goes up that they'll accept the price increase without resenting you. A value narrative, for example, could be past value. You need to pay more because we've been doing all these things for you.
Which, right? They will not have remembered.
Right, because they won't, and they won't remember because they get amnesia in the face of a price increase. Right. It could be present value, and that sometimes happens. You know, typically, you're working on a project, and this would be for, like, if you're an agency, you're working on a project with your customer, and they begin changing the game. You might need to sit down with them and say, I've got to raise your prices because you're asking for this. In order to deliver that value for you, we have to do these things. And then a future value narrative, which is the most popular way to deliver a price increase, says we're increasing our prices now so that we can give you more later. And you just have to be careful with this because so many people use that customers get a little bit cynical. Like they're like, yeah, heard it all before. Don't buy it.
Yeah. Or I'm not getting it now.
Yeah, exactly. So mm-hmm. you have to be able to explain what that's going to look like. And in between, there are other narratives along the way, like, you know, continuing service narrative, or, you know, or making sure that we can take care of, the quality narrative. So we're going to increase or improve the quality narrative. But the point is that you need to be able to articulate the price increase in a way that's going to connect best with your customer, based on that unique situation. So with defending a price increase, when I say defending, the company as a whole said, everybody's getting a price increase. Salespeople are taking incoming fire. They need to be able to articulate why the price increase happened. Marketing's going to play a big role in that. Leadership's going to play a big role in that. When salespeople are proactively approaching customers with price increases, then they need to be able to, with each of those customers, have a narrative or have a way of explaining the price increase that's going to make the most sense for that customer. Go back to your risk profile or risk profile matrix. Mm-hmm. That allows you to sort of think about and inform how you're going to approach the price increase.
It's great. There's so many things we could talk about, but you're being really generous with your time, especially since you're on vacation. Although your lovely wife, Carrie, is getting a Jeb break. So this is like Jeb daycare. Carrie, you're welcome. Let me just ask two other really big questions towards the latter half of the book. And that is, I just had to kind of smile. You talk about how sales reps, you deal with lots of sales reps, and they are just emphatic that their competitors are all selling at a lower price, and therefore you're crazy to even ask them to go and even think about asking for a price increase, and they can't do it. How do you respond to that?
This is a form of the frequency illusion. So the frequency illusion is when you hear something over and over and over again, even if it's not true, you begin to believe it's true. So where do salespeople typically get their information about what their customers are charging? Well, they get it from their competitors are charging. They get it from their customers. So the customers are always saying to them, your competitors are charging a lot lower than you are. I mean, walk through the door with a price increase. What's the first thing the customer is going to say to you? Oh, well, I'll just go to your competitor. They're much lower than you. Mm-hmm. So salespeople, for the most part, they get brainwashed by their customers and by their prospects who are constantly telling them what their competitors are charging, whether that's true or not true. And that's normal for salespeople, because every salesperson I meet, you know, says their competitors charge less than they do. I don't meet any salespeople who say, "Oh yeah, we're the lowest price in the marketplace." They always say we're the highest price.
So it's approximately 100% of the time.
It's approximately 100% of the people. So for a salesperson's standpoint, it's just getting real about this. Like, just if you say my competitors are lower, ask yourself, real simple, just go look in the mirror, who's telling me that? So if you're honest with yourself, it's all come from your customers, who it's in their best interest to scare you off by telling you your competitors are lower than you are. And if you're a leader or you're a marketer, maybe it would be in your best interest to go out and do the market research so that you could actually show your salespeople the data about where your competitors are, so that your salespeople can actually see that from a reality standpoint, which makes it easier for them when a customer says your competitor is lower to have the facts in hand.
Yes, more data, less drama. One of the last things I want to ask you about is from page 241. I just want you to explain. This is the latter part of the book where you talk about, you know, overcoming objections and negotiating and all that. You write, the biggest mistake sellers make when negotiating price increases is negotiating before they have acceptance.
Yes. I'm glad that you asked that question. So let's just think about this book and the theme of this book. The theme of the book is to sell the price increase without losing your customer. Because it doesn't make a difference if you get the price increase if the customer leaves you in the process.
Very important, right?
So
yes.
Basic. So the customer accepting the price increase is a pretty big deal. That means the customer says, okay, I'm willing to take it and I'm not leaving you. It's important that they accept the price increase without resenting you, because in some cases, they may accept the price increase because in the short time they don't have another, or short term they don't have another choice. But they resent you enough that down the road they're going to find a way to get even. So we want acceptance without resentment. Mm-hmm. Pretty simple, right? So when you're dealing with a customer. And let's say that it's a bigger customer, it's a higher risk customer, and you're going to that customer proactively and you're presenting the price increase, or you're presenting a business case for why they should have the price increase. And they say, look, you know what? I'm not paying this. Or they go, you know what? I think I'm going to go look around at a competitor. Or they say, you know, this isn't fair. It's not fair at all. You know, I'm going to need to think about this. I'm not sure what we're going to do. We might just quit even using you altogether. We might just quit using this product. We might do it in-house. Right? Those are all objections. Mm-hmm. And the salesperson immediately begins to giving away price increase points. Mm. So the person says, I'm not paying it. Well, what if I can make it 5%? Okay, well, if you were asking for a 10% price increase, you just gave away 50% of your price increase. Now, if we just consider the drop-through on that, and then the compounding effect of that drop-through over time, giving away 50% of your price increase is a massive financial hit. So what happened was, instead of dealing with the objection, you started negotiating. They hadn't accepted it. Acceptance says this. It says, Douglas, look, I get it. I know you got to raise your prices. I understand that labor is up. I understand all those things, but this is too much. I can't pay this much. So what can you do for me? That's negotiating. An objection is, I don't agree with the price increase. Negotiating is, I accept the price increase. Now let's work out the terms of the price increase. Mm-hmm. And salespeople need to know the difference. But when you are, you know, you're concerned about being rejected, when you are, you know, you're not in control of your disruptive emotions, you have a tendency to start giving things away before you get acceptance. So when you get an objection, you need to deal with the objection. When you get a negotiation, hey, look, I'm willing to pay it, but not pay that much, or I'm not willing to accept these particular terms, then you can work through a negotiation. So just be very, very careful that when someone says, I'm not willing to pay it, that your first move isn't, let me reduce the price increase. Right? You need to understand what their situation is. And I give you four different frameworks for dealing with objections in the book. Mm-hmm. And then if we go back to the risk profile, right? If you understand what their alternatives are, right? You understand what your risk is. Then in some cases, if they say they're not paying it and it's your largest customer and they're already pretty profitable and they have a lot of alternatives, your off-ramp might be, okay, I'll go someplace else, right? You know, so that may be the situation. But in
you, but
know,
you won't
in
feel many, bad because you'll have done the homework.
At least you asked, right? Yeah. And you did the homework, right? So, but in some cases, you know, it may be they're not paying it, but they don't really have any other alternatives, or you've been delivering a really high level of service, or in some cases, they're hard to work with, low profit. And you go, okay, thanks. Have a nice life. I'll see you later.
Yeah.
But you know, but in these cases, you know what you're dealing with, and then you can work through dealing with objections. And you'll find, you know, a lot of work in the book on objections. But objections for price increases are relatively easy to deal with. They're much different than, say, objections when you're prospecting or closing objections. They're just a different animal, primarily because of the status quo, primarily because you already have the customer. So the objection is to the price increase, not to doing business with you.
Let me just read it one more time. The biggest mistake sellers make when negotiating price increases is negotiating before they have acceptance. So Jeb, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
That selling a price increase is a connected system and a process. And if you want to maximize your price increase initiatives, if you want to drive more profit to the bottom line, the entire organization, and I'm really glad that we started with marketing, has to work together. But selling a price increase is a process just like any other process in sales. Mm-hmm. And when we think about prospecting, for example, there are processes for prospecting. We think about selling, there's a sales process. If you think about dealing with objections, there's a process for dealing with objections. We think about account management, there's a process for, you know, for managing your accounts and growing your accounts. But for some reason, businesses where price increase is so important, like you said, it's one of the four P's. It is the easiest, fastest way to drive profit. There's no process for price increase, like for selling it. Like they just go sell. So if we take away one thing and you say there's a system and a process for this, and we teach salespeople to run that process and run that system like we do every single thing else in sales, or everything else in sales, then you're going to get much better outcomes along the way. You're going to have happier customers, and your business is going to grow exponentially.
Well said. Well said. What is just one thing a listener could do today to put in action one of the ideas from your book, just to get them started thinking about this?
Let's say you're an account manager, I would pull my accounts. I would just take a look at all my accounts and see right now, start segmenting those accounts out. Where can I go in and get price increases? Because your job is to expand those relationships, and price increases do that. If you're a leader, do the same thing. Start looking at your organization and saying, where can we go get price increases right now that can impact the bottom line and make us stronger? And if you're a marketer, the one thing that you could do, and I highly recommend this, is go pick this book up, take a look at what your role is in the price increase initiatives in your organization, and there will always be price increase initiatives, but look what your role is and start thinking about how you can, like you said, you would be a hero if you do this. How can you plug this in to these price increase initiatives so that at the end of the day, you're able to go back to your CEO, to your boss, and say, we got much better price increase outcomes because we were running these processes?
Yes, great advice. Marketers, don't wait for your management to tell you to go do this. It's called marketing leadership. So chapter 14, that's right where they should go. Of course, they should read the whole thing, but that sales, that account manager, they could go through just this one chapter and go through the matrix here. It makes me think of Keanu Reeves, but go through this and then you'll be amazed at how, actually, I would think just going through the process, it probably reduces the emotion and the fear that companies have if they look at it more objectively. So
no doubt.
Are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or are looking forward to reading or writing?
The book I'm really looking forward to is my buddy Anthony Annarino is got a book called Leading Growth that should be out this fall.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a different type of book than he's written in the past. So I think for your audience in particular, this book is going to be meaningful because what is marketing about other than growth? Nothing, right? So marketing's mm-hmm. job is to grow a business. And this book is really focused on the things you have to do to lead high growth organizations.
Great advice. And I interviewed him not too long ago about his fourth book, Elite Sales Strategies. He's coming after you, Jeb. I don't know if you know this, but Anthony's very competitive, and he's not gonna be happy knowing that you're in the six timers club. So
I know it makes him crazy every single day that he'll never catch me.
Oh, this is the trash talking segment of the Marketing Book Podcast. So great. Well, at marketingbookpodcast.com, we're going to include links to everything linkable, including all the books that have been mentioned and some of the other features you have, the sales negotiation planner and the price increase playbook, your website, your LinkedIn profile, your Twitter account. And part of the reason we're doing that is so that you, dear listener, can do me a big favor and reach out in some way to Jeb and congratulate him on the book and thank him for being a guest on the Marketing Book Podcast. Send a message on LinkedIn, Twitter, or his website. Don't show up at his lake house. That kind of freaks him out. But guests on the show have told me that they really enjoy hearing from Marketing Book Podcast listeners, and not just because Marketing Book Podcast listeners are so ridiculously good looking. And if you are listening on your smartphone and you've subscribed to the Marketing Book Podcast on your favorite podcast app like Spotify or Apple Podcast, all these links can be found by going to this episode right now and clicking on this episode's website link. The book is Selling the Price Increase, the ultimate B2B field guide for raising prices without losing customers. The author is Jeb Blunt. Jeb, thank you very much for returning to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I look forward to coming back for the next book.
Oh, yes! And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. Special thanks to this episode's sponsor, Marketing Architects, creators of the all-inclusive TV advertising concept that's so revolutionary, they wrote a book about it. For a free copy of the book, All-Inclusive TV, How Booming Brands Are Reimagining TV Advertising, visit this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com or visit marketingarchitects.com/book and tell them you heard about it on the Marketing Book Podcast. And if you're one of the legions of listeners who have left an iTunes review, please let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast stuff. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world, and I'll drop it in the mail. And remember the words of the late, great Jim Rohn, who said, formal education will make you a living, self-education will make you a fortune.
You know, I'll tell you what, I've never had a sales manager I've liked.
Is that because sales managers don't know how to sell, but they do know how to yell?
Ooh, nice. Ooh, nice.